Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress of Comic News, episode 285. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host here, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, everybody. It's I want to wish Chris a happy birthday. A little late, but there it is. I hope you had a good birthday weekend. Did you do anything exciting?
To be fair,
you
did wish it to me on my birthday, so...
Yeah, but this is public. We're in public domain now, Chris. This is on a recording device. Oh, I guess it'll be Wednesday, yeah, so it'll be even later. But did you get your Philly cheesesteak?
Yeah, I went home Friday night, made a Philly cheesesteak for myself.
Nice.
And then I had dinner with my parents, and we had steak. So I was way outside of my diet for 2 days.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, good times.
Nice.
Relaxing, hanging out. Beat Final Fantasy VII Remake. That was my birthday accomplishment.
Yeah, that game looks sick. I need to get into that game.
It's really good.
Just for everybody, quick, we do have a dual interview today with Leland Bjerg and Josh Thompson about their book Berserker Monk. Issue 3 is out, coming to Kickstarter. It's on Kickstarter right now. It looks sick. Go check it out. Really simple Kickstarter, a lot of cool stuff. Really, there's a few sketches left as of now for commissions, really low commissions, yeah. Low price commissions. So check that stuff out. There are a couple cool guys. You know, give them a backer and give them all your love. So
yeah, the book looks really cool. So
yeah, for sure. Makes me want to get back into D&D. So let's see. I guess we'll just jump right into it. TV, you want to talk She-Hulk? Is it done yet? Episode 7?
No, I think there's one more episode. I won't get into too much because there's another kind of episode.
Yeah.
Just didn't really enjoy it. But there was one like bright moment or bright character, I should say. So like Abomination has this like, you go to his farm. Mm-hmm. And he has this support group that he's a part of, or that he's leading, I guess, for like supervillains.
That's awesome.
And you meet these three other supervillains, and one's like one's Man Bull. Actually, it was four. I forget what the second guy was. There was a guy that thinks he's a vampire, but I guess isn't a vampire.
Okay.
And then there's the guy that attacked Jen and like, I don't know, episode 3 or whatever, that was part of the wrecking crew, like the terrible wrecking crew that they better fix.
Yeah.
But then they also had Porcupine, which is an old Ant-Man villain.
Yeah.
Which was fantastic. But other than that, like, it was kind of a meh episode. Just give me goddamn Daredevil already.
Episode 8, it's coming. Last episode, Chris. We knew it.
It's got to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, oh man, I can't wait for
it. It's all been a troll on people like me to get their numbers up. That's what it is.
Yeah, they're just we got you. Star Wars, I have not watched any Andor yet, but I know episode 4 is out. Are you caught up on that?
Yeah, I'd liked episode 4. This show is much more like meticulous and slow than you would think a Star Wars show would be. Andor kind of gets involved with his first rebel cell. He gets his first mission. And you get kind of the background of some of the other characters and who they are and how they're connected to this. Because right now in the lore, the rebellion is really just like cells of quote-unquote terrorists.
Uh-huh.
And they're not one group put together under Leia yet.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But there's some cool things in there. Like there's a one moment where one of the guys who picked up Andor, he's actually like some big shot with some of the senators and everything. So he has all the insides into the Empire. Mm-hmm. And he has this collection of old artifacts. And one of them is like an old Sith armor. And it looks kind of like the armor from Starkiller from Force Unleashed.
Oh, okay.
So there's like cool things like that in the background. But I'm enjoying it. It's different from what most Star Wars stuff has been, which I think is a good thing because it shows a different type of storytelling, kind of like the Mandalorian did. Okay. It just doesn't have a baby Yoda for everybody excited about.
Yeah, true. I'm sure I'll like it. Lord of the Rings, I'm behind an episode. Rings of Power, I should say. but I'm still enjoying it. People that are whining about it, I think, are just always going to whine about things. Hot D, House of the Dragon, new episode tonight, because it is Sunday, but actually Wednesday. I know it's confusing for our listeners. They did a time jump in the last episode. The last few episodes have been absolute bangers, like some crazy shit going down of like the princess like marrying another dude just to join the families when like they both know they have like she's in love with the king's guard and he's in love with like one of his squires, so they like both make an agreement like, listen, we know you love other people, we just need to have babies for the kingdom. And then like the lovers end up fighting each other and he literally just like pounds his face in at the end of the episode and you're just like, okay. So that's going to complicate things a little bit, but then they do a big time jump. So now the actors are completely different for episode 6, which is fine because we need to start, you know, propelling the plot a little forward to get these characters in the spot where they're all going to start fighting each other. And you can see things start to set up, of where each one is. And, yeah, there's a lot of good memes going around about this show because, you want to hate Matt Smith's character so badly because he does all these awful things, but like you know, all the memes are like, ah, oh, stupid, sexy, Matt Smith or whatever. I can't think of his character's name right now because they're like, you know, everybody's in love with him. So there it's like, okay, he's doing all these awful things, but you still find yourself like rooting for every episode because like, he's a likable character the way they do him. It's pretty awesome. But he's killing it. So I'm really enjoying it. I mean, that and Rings of Power, if you like fantasy, you're going to like it. And the new Rick and Morty episode, the season's been really good. If you like Rick and Morty, you're going to like this season of Rick and Morty. That's all I'll say about that. I don't know if you've been watching it.
I'm excited for that to hit HBO Max.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I buy those episodes just so I can watch it ahead of time. But
yeah.
I guess we'll just hop over to movies. So I want to talk about Hocus Pocus 2 for a second, because we're in October. I'm really excited to be in the States for October, because last October I was gone for a whole month for work over to Europe, and I didn't get to like sit and enjoy all the horror movies and, you know, spooky stuff that you get to do during October. So, you know, started off strong on October 1st watching Hocus Pocus, you know. Watched Happy Death Day. That's one of my favorites. It's a fun movie. And then we watched Hocus Pocus 2 today. And definitely not as good as Hocus Pocus 1. I feel bad saying this, but like, you know, some people have like confirmed it with me that like there's a certain point where those I don't know the names of everybody playing the three witches, but they're just too old. And especially without addressing it, like during the movie, like, okay, you know, they're trying to do the same things they were doing when they, you know, I don't know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago now, holy crap. And it's to the point where like some of their voices are even different now. Long story short, the sequel didn't need to be made, and they did make it, but they like made it for all the wrong reasons. It's more of a kids movie. None of the original characters are in it from the first movie besides the witches. So like we get a whole new slew of four different like high school characters. I don't care about any of them. It's more of a kids movie with like really no, it's like full on PG movie of like, I don't know. At least like the first movie was like, you know, talking about like sacrificing virgins and like killing children and stuff, even though it's like, you know, a fun movie. Like this doesn't even touch any of that stuff. They're like, it's just, oh, power of friendship. But yeah.
I feel like with these movies, like, I know, like, Top Gun did really well, even though I didn't see it.
Right, because Tom Cruise still looks great for his age, but, like, that, yeah, well, that probably helps.
From what I'm told, too, like, they address, like, they fit the fact that it's been, what, 20 years? No, 40 years since that movie came, however long.
Yeah, right.
They address that in the story. But I think that's a one in a million shot.
Like, yeah.
All these cash grabs to be like, hey, what's that thing that all these millennials liked when they were kids? Let's do a sequel to that.
Han Solo. They brought Han Solo back. We can bring the three witches. Well,
hey, let's not.
Yeah.
Let's not go that far. Like, yeah, do all the stories you want. But yeah. No, that joke aside, I don't have a fondness for Hocus Pocus, so excuse me here, but like, it's not like Hocus Pocus was a huge thing. Like, it was a thing that I know a lot of people I know enjoyed, but like, there's no fandom around it. It's,
yeah.
And even things with fandoms around it, like, look at Terminator. Like, I love Terminator as a kid. Those first couple movies are great. New ones, they're so bad.
Just stop making them. Yeah.
So I don't like this going back to the well anymore, especially when it's been, like you said, 30 years since the last movie.
Yeah,
and you're gonna bring back the original cast.
And there's no reason, you brought this movie back after 30 years. Bring back the cast now that they're older. Like, do that. Like, do the Ghostbusters thing. Like, bring everybody back. You know, don't do. I don't. But whatever.
Don't call it Hocus Pocus 2. Call it Hocus Pocus.
A new age.
Hocus here or whatever.
Hocus
and
here.
Like,
Hocus here, Pocus here.
or do something and then like bring in a new cast. That way it's like someone like you will be like, oh, I'll check it out because it's Hocus Pocus. But then new people can attach to it and be like, oh, this is a different thing. It may be a good, maybe bad, but like, doing a sequel this far out for who even stars in it? I know Bette Midler's in it, but
yeah, that's one of them. And oh my god, I can't think of her name from Sex and the City.
Because like all three of them are kind of nobodies at this point.
Well,
they're not nobodies, but like they're not famous. They're not in the public consciousness and of film these days.
All right, we better move on before Chris pisses off too many Hocus Pocus fans. But no, I wouldn't say it's a bad movie. It's just like I feel no different after watching it. I certainly did not need it. After watching it, I was like, okay, it's not something we needed, you know.
Just one last thing to your comment. After getting lambasted at the comic shop because I was told that Morbius is and I quote, really good, and critique of it was, and I quote, way too far. I don't put it past anybody to be mad at me over something stupid like Hocus Pocus was a blockbuster that everybody loves to this day.
We're not even going to touch the Morbius thing because the fact that there's a meme out there that says it's Morbin time tells me it's a terrible movie. And I'll watch it at some point. I heard it's not terrible. I mean, I heard it's not the worst movie, but like, there's so many other things I need to watch before I get to that. I'm not in a rush, you know? Okay, now we're into the movie news. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
Marvel Studios has decided to change the direction of the upcoming Armor Wars series. It will now be filmed and released as a major motion picture in theaters. No word on the release date. I think that's cool. Don Cheadle, you know, give him his dues, man. He's been here. Give him a movie. Why not?
That's fine. If you think you got something and you can do it, do it.
Yeah.
I got no problem with it, and at the end of the day, too, like, there's so much coming out on these streaming services.
Right.
It probably saves me, like, 2 hours of my life.
Yeah, for sure.
But I like the idea of Cheadle getting his own thing. I like the idea of War Machine getting his comeuppance before he leaves the MCU.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm down with this.
This is sad. Marvel Studios hit with the movie Blade was hit with a big loss. The director, Bassam Tarek, has left the project, and it will now film in 2023. So, yeah, I had high hopes, but hopefully, I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing. I guess we'll find out.
It is a find out, because it's like, this has happened before. Look at Ant-Man.
Yeah, look at Ant-Man, right.
And yeah, so I was going to say, it's happened before, and it's turned out really well. But I was really pumped for Blade, so it kind of sucks. I might have to wait like a little bit longer to get it.
I might just have to rewatch the trilogy again.
I don't know if you want to watch that last one.
Yeah, we don't talk about the last one. Is that the one Ryan Reynolds
Blade,
is in?
Blade Trinity fans can come after me too, I guess. But yeah it's the Ryan Reynolds one.
Yeah, you're just racking them up in your utility belt. All right, what fans do you want to piss off next, Chris?
Dude, yeah, those first two movies are good. I don't care.
These are all the fans hanging out in the clearance section of Hot Topic with their Morbius shirts and their Blade Trinity shirts.
Yeah, they want to get mad at me about my bad takes. I guess, like, I love the first two Blade movies. The original TMT movies are genuinely great movies. And I enjoyed The Spirit, so I guess that explains everything about my movie taste, so...
There you go. This was kind of wild. This dropped last week. There's news: Deadpool 3 is Ryan Reynolds takes to Twitter to talk about first Deadpool movie set in the MCU. We now know it's coming September 4th, 2024, and Hugh Jackman's coming back as Wolverine. Holy shit! Chris is like so torn because, man, like, he's not a Deadpool fan, but. Well, maybe Wolverine in the original yellow costume? What? Maybe? Can we get it?
It's going to get me to go see it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, but maybe it'll be like Deadpool 2, where I'll be like, hey, it was better than 1 because there's less Deadpool.
I'll say, dude, this is how, like, if they're going to start introducing X-Men in the MCU, I'm excited for this movie. I mean, I love the first two Deadpool movies, but you're bringing back Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and putting him in the cinematic universe. Oh my God.
Yeah. I feel like it'll be a big part of the plot, but I feel like he will be like the Wolverine from that universe still. And we will still get a new Wolverine.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go see it just because, yeah, I like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, and I'll be interested to see how they do this. This is more of a morbid curiosity because I know going in, I'm probably not going to like the movie. I'm just not a Deadpool fan, so it's not that they're bad movies, just that they're not movies that I like. So I'll be morbidly curious to see how this works out. And Morbid. See if there's more like cameos. Like,
yeah, I'm do they almost, bring in are more? They gonna, are the only like multiverse Deadpool shit I know is like Cullen Bunn's, you know, Deadpool kills the Marvel universe. So like, if Deadpool comes over and starts fighting like the Avengers and shit, I don't know. I think
they've
be
done.
Awesome.
What was that one? It was like, I think it was like I don't know if it was Deadpool verse or Pool verse or something stupid like that. And they've done it with other characters, and it was stupid then, too. But where it literally, like, he goes to different universes to visit different versions of Deadpool. So I know there's that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've heard that a lot where, like, kills the Marvel Universe is what they should do. But I almost think it should be that, but kills the X-Men universe.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe make Wolverine, like, the villain.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Them fighting each other.
Yeah, so... But we'll see. I'm sure they got something planned that their fan base is going to love.
Yeah, I know. Hugh Jackman's cashing a giant fucking check is all I know.
Oh, yeah.
Huge money. All right, everybody. Let's hop to this interview with Leland and Josh about Berserker Monk, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody. We've got two very special guests for you all this week. I want everyone to welcome to the show Leland Bjerg and Josh Thompson. Welcome, guys.
Hey, guys.
Thanks. You nailed the name. Good job.
Yeah. I was like, oh, first one down, one out of two. Here we go. Yeah. That's Chris. Chris has come a long way with that after, you know, a couple hundred episodes. He's like a pro at pronouncing names. So really proud of him.
It's a good skill to have.
Yeah.
Growth, you know.
Put that one on the resume. Thanks for being here, guys. You know, for both of you, it's your first time. So before we get into Berserker Monk and all that awesome stuff, let's hear your origin stories. I don't know if Leland, you want to go first. Just what got you into comics? You know, where did it all start for you?
Comics started for me. I mean, I think most people that love comics to some degree, they click. They're a way of telling stories that works with your brain. And I don't know. I really found that my earliest comics were Ninja Turtles and Calvin and Hobbes, and pretty quickly in there, whatever was at my grocery store in the small town I grew up in, right? I had I had the magazine rack, which was still ubiquitous in the 80s and 90s. And so I was grabbing, you know, when I was going hard, I was grabbing everything that was on our shelf, which was this weird mix of like TMNT Adventures. And then there was no DC. We had Marvel books though. So there was one Spider-Man book. There was, Excalibur. We got some new series started up. I was collecting, the New Warriors, Nova, Thunderstrike, just, you know, I think it was, you know, somebody's,
it's like a mom garage who worked sale.
Somebody's mom who worked at the grocery store, I'm sure, was just picking off a list, or the distributor was just like, here, these, you know,
might be cool.
Bumpkin kids will like these books. And I love them. I was thinking about that Nova run, man, there's a amazing issue where, you know, Nova's got all these cosmic powers, but he doesn't know how to use them, which I actually think is a great, you know, a pretty cool premise. And he's kind of a slacker, and he's not doing a great job of like living up to his potential. And in one of the issues, a future version of him comes and kicks his ass and is using all these amazing powers and is from an apocalyptic future where Nova failed and is there to motivate him to be better. And to this day, it's one of my favorite single issues of comics. It's kick-ass storytelling.
That is pretty awesome.
So that was always the struggle for me, was like loving comics but not having the whole picture. In particular, when they do big crossover events, it would be a big struggle, because like Maximum Carnage came out when I was the perfect age. And so that was across all the, you know, it was like 13 or 15 issues across all the different Spider-Man titles. And so we got a third of them. And then it was this quest for me and all my friends to go to the neighboring towns and get the issues of Amazing Spider-Man and Spectacular Spider-Man and assemble this
yep.
Voltron of you know, cross series storytelling. So that was a big achievement. And actually, to this day, we didn't succeed. I never got to read the final issue of Maximum Carnage. I really should like find it at a con and grab a copy and finally find out how it all ends.
I don't Somebody know if send us, man, the dollar yeah. final issue yeah. of Maximum Carnage, please. Like,
yeah,
the 25 yeah, cent
I'm sure,
bin.
I'm sure it's not crazily in demand or anything.
Yeah. I don't think it'll ever live up to the hype, so you probably just might never want to read it. I don't know, at this point.
Well, if I can yeah. channel 11-year-old me, it'll be,
yeah, maybe.
I'll have a good time.
and then so there came a point where you were like, okay, maybe I could write a script or something.
I guess this is only the first half of the origin story.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, was obsessed as a kid, and then went through the common phase, of comics are kids stuff, both from pressure from my parents and I think also just like frustration at the amount of access I had to comics. Fell off for years, became obsessed with other things, and then came across, it was the book that pulled me back into comics was Skull Kickers, by Jim Zub. Came across it as a web comic and just, you know, it was so much fun, fantasy, action fantasy with a sense of humor, which is right up my alley. You know, I was like, this comic's like Army of Darkness, and had been kind of out of it and was unaware of, you know, had that sort of genre bias of, oh, comics can be more than what I remember them being as a kid. Got into Skull Kickers, started buying Skull Kickers, and then just from there fell back in love again, and got to, you know, got the joy of like the 20-year gap you know, between when I stopped reading comics and started up again, and going back and discovering things that I didn't have access to as a kid, discovering Alan Moore and getting to read Watchmen and his Swamp Thing run, and Hellboy. I think Hellboy was what really sealed the deal for me, which was a thing, that a close friend of mine was like shoving in my hands as a teenager. And I was like, comics, you know, at the time. And I have like all the, you know, complete Hellboy collection on my shelf.
That's awesome.
And yeah, that was when I was like, I want to do this. I've always loved storytelling and been trying to do it through music and poetry and half finished novels, and comics was like, I'm home. This is the medium I really want to work in.
Awesome. And so now after that, Josh, what about you? So how did you get here drawing comics?
It's not going to be quite as interesting. And
no, that's all right.
But yeah, I mean, I've been drawing that like some of my earliest memories, and it was always, I was obsessed with Star Wars as a kid. And that's all I would draw was Han Solo and Chewbacca fighting. But I always was adjacent to comics for the first little while. Like, I loved the old 80s, like, Super Friends cartoon and had all those toys, was obsessed with Batman. But I never really knew, like, comic books reach such a wide audience. Like, to me, it was always just the rack at the, like, I'd go see my grandpa, he'd take me to the drugstore, I'd get a Batman off the rack, and that's what I thought comics was, like, five comics. And then the Marvel cards came out when I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
And that changed literally everything for me. And I was obsessed with that. And then I found out that there was a comic store in my town. So I went to it, and it was just most eye-opening thing ever. I mean, up until then, like, I was drawing comics. I was wanting to draw comics. I didn't know that's what I was doing. To me, my mom was always like, you're going to be a dentist who paints. And that's what I thought my life
was. Oh, God.
I didn't think art could be a career, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I saw these, and that just changed my trajectory. And I was obsessed with Jim Lee, was obsessed with Image. Didn't care less about storytelling at all. Like, the first writer that I actually paid attention to the storytelling was when my friend gave me Preacher, and that would have been like 2006 or something. And I was like, oh wow, like,
yeah
this is what a comic can be. Like, I was reading whatever new Rob Liefeld Youngblood thing, so storytelling wasn't on my radar at all.
And you're just into pretty art.
I'd had like 5-6 artists that I was always into X-Men, so I always got that, but I had like 5 or 6 artists that I just follow from comic to comic, and that was it. When they left, I stopped that comic, didn't care what the storyline was, but then you get Preacher, I unlock, and so that was just a deep dive of, all of Ennis's stuff, and then, you should read this.
Yep.
Wow, then my comic collection ballooned.
Got
ridiculous, but so, I mean, I never stopped drawing, and I was always like, I'll be a comic book artist. That was always a goal, but I never knew how to do it. And I never really, it was always like, I'll figure it out eventually. And then I met up with a group of people that were all sort of in the same thing. I want to do this. I don't really know how. So we all sort of learned together, and that's where I met Leland. And we sort of learned how to make a comic together. He was already well ahead of where I was, because I think he'd already actually made a comic by the time I met you.
I mean, that's very flattering. I think I had the same feeling when you showed up with like incredible, 11 by 17 pages of beautifully inked like Boba Fett comics that you were drawing. You know, I think I had the exact same feeling you did of, this guy's way ahead of me and he can draw.
That's awesome. So you guys were like the two puzzle pieces you needed. You're like, you both thought, he's way ahead. So now we could start this thing up. And, obviously, so Leland, the Berserker Monk, where did that come from? Was that just an idea you've had?
If I can cut in real quick before we go there. Because Josh, what everybody wants to know, did you also become a dentist?
Oh, yeah.
No.
I forgot to ask. I was thinking that, too. And also, where's this 11 by 17 Chewbacca comic?
Oh, no, the Chewbacca. Yeah, I've got the Boba Fett comic somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, a year removed and you're like, oh, that looks terrible. I don't. Like, well, I was working on it. I loved it, and I was going to publish it. And then a year later, I'm like, oh, I want to change this, this, and this.
You're your own worst critic.
Exactly.
Especially when you're staring at it too long. But yeah,
he's an artist.
Yeah. So Berserker Monk, like, how did that come about between you guys?
Well, it started with an idea of the sort of trope of the like European guy who goes to Asia and like learns the way of the samurai or learns kung fu, which is, you know, yeah, like Iron Fist, right?
Right.
You know, the Last Samurai, like
the Last Samurai,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, I'd love to do a flip of that. What is a like European martial art that an Asian coming to Europe could learn? And I was like, well, a Viking berserker is a fighting style. I don't, you know. And so I was like, I want to flip that. And so that was kind of the beginning. That was the seed, was just this, you know, kind of turning that trope on its head. And then from there, wanting to, I'd been, you know, my first comic that I made that Josh mentioned, I did the common thing of being a first-time creator and trying to do something gigantic. And I got some really good advice to do short comics as I was learning. And so I started writing. I had this idea for a berserker monk, and I started writing short stories with this character. Which is really fun with the, you know, with the fantasy sort of environment, you know, one episode I can do pirates and voodoo and magic, and another episode, you know, a sort of zombie rabies horror comic. You know, I had all these ideas, and this character just gave me room to play. And as I was playing, I was like, okay, what's this guy's origin story? And pretty quickly I had a bunch of ideas and I liked, and I was like, what if I just tell them all? And so that became the premise for like the first arc, is this tavern, you know, this everybody's favorite D&D trope of like a group of eclectic characters in a tavern. Yep. They're discussing this, you know, this sort of folk hero, the berserker monk, and everybody's telling a different conflicting origin story, and they're all arguing with each other. And I don't know, I just thought that was fun. It felt kind of, I'm a big Quentin Tarantino fan. It felt like that. I like the idea of unreliable narrators. And part of the mystery of the story actually being who's lying, who's telling the truth. So I'm writing these scripts, bringing them into the workshops, and Josh liked one of them. And he was just kind of like, hey, I'm just going to draw one of these, like, just, you know, for my portfolio. And I'll hand it off to you, Josh, because I talk a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we were just sort of starting out, and I was starting to really want to build portfolio stuff. But the problem, I mean, I'm not a writer, so I was like making up little stories, but I was kind of frustrated with it. I don't really like writing my own stuff. So that was a good thing about going to these little workshops with all these guys, is there was a bunch of other writers making little scripts. And yeah, what Leland's wrote really spoke to me. Like, I think the first story was like about that groundskeeper that cuts down the tree, and just this old spirit comes out of the tree to haunt him. And like, yeah, I just saw all the cool visuals that could come out of that, and was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna draw this if you don't have a problem. And
And I was like greedily rubbing my hands, like, no,
sure,
I guess, yeah, sure, yeah, I guess,
sure, you, I'll let I you, guess draw you could draw. It.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean it. So then, yeah, I mean, I love the fact that A, they're short stories. You don't, because one thing about when you start drawing like a long story is inevitably you start to get bored after a while, like. You're thinking of the next cool thing. So that's one thing I love about this. You do what, like 12 pages and you're off to like, now we're doing the zombie cannibals and next we'll do the pirate voodoo. And it's like, there's always just an awesome new creature to design or an awesome new like genre to tackle. So I love it. It's, I just love the whole fantasy, like kind of Conan thing where the world can just be different every issue. And any cool thing you can think of is completely on the table. So I love doing it.
So are the issues in this series, are they all like these short contained stories? Do they flow through some sort of long narrative or how does it set up?
Yeah. So we got the framing device of the, of these characters in a tavern and each one sort of tells a story that reflects their background and reflects a way that they interacted with the berserker monk. And while that's happening and each of them are telling their stories, whenever somebody finishes a story, we come back to the tavern and then we cut away to the monk himself who is working his way towards the tavern.
Oh, okay.
So the way the series is set up is we did two issues with two short stories each. So issue one is, I think, 20 pages, has an 8-page story and a 12-page story that, you know, flow into each other. And then issue two is 24 pages. I think it's two 12-page stories. And then the final, the third issue and the final issue in this arc is 16 pages and is a longer story that is the monk getting to the tavern and what happens when he gets there and tells his side of things.
So whose idea was it to do the third issue through the stomach of someone? Because that's pretty gnarly. The cover of the third issue, I should say.
I was definitely Leland's because I was going back. I was actually going back through our chat history because there was some picture I'd posted to you a long time ago I was trying to find. Yeah. And I actually found that rough that you originally drew. Oh, you're with a hole in it and then another.
It's like a circle.
On your side. So
that's like, awesome.
Yeah, I think like some clip art of somebody meditating
in the middle. because I when you were talking about Preacher earlier, Josh, that's like what it reminded me of, like a Preacher cover to me. That's pretty awesome.
Nice.
So the Kickstarter's going on right now. Let's talk about it. So this is the first time you've released these issues, correct? Or have you had them printed before? Or?
We've done issues one and two. Just you know, gone to our local printer who is amazing, and at this point I've got a good relationship with them because they printed like 5 or 6 comics for me at least. One and two we did, and we had all this, we were really excited. We had all this momentum. We printed issue two right before COVID hit. And I remember I went out to Vancouver Fan Expo and was like, you know, hawking it out there. And like, as I was there and was talking to other people at the convention, it was like COVID fear was ramping up. The cruise ship that was
in Tokyo,
full of people. Wouldn't let it come to land, and people were dying on the cruise ship. And we were all kind of looking at each other like, we might not get to do this again for a while.
Wow.
And it was absolutely true. And so it was a real, real blow to our momentum. And I think we were like issue three was like in production at that point, and maybe even pretty much in the can. I think we were like sending it off to Gabriel, our colorist, and then it was just like, oh, there's no conventions. Our sphere of influence is just, you know, we live in British Columbia in Canada, and you know, had not really figured out social media or Kickstarter or anything like that. So we just had this project that we were excited about and kind of sitting on. And so over the course of COVID, I worked on another book called Capsules, which is about a couple trapped in an escape pod in deep space trying to deal with PTSD. And it's like a drama. It's very different from Berserker Monk.
Yeah,
but I did a Kickstarter for it, and it went really well. And I was like, oh, these doors have been flung open. Mm-hmm. Here's this way to put comics out that we weren't aware of. And oh, I have this awesome series that Josh and I did that we've been waiting for a reason to print the third issue. And here it is. Like, that's awesome. cons are coming back. It's time to jump back in and get this, you know, finish this project that we were really excited about.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's already over 60% funded, right? And I would say this, your goal is relatively low, compared to some we've seen. So you can, I mean, you said the first two issues are already finished. This is just for the third issue. Do you have any stretch goals in mind or anything like that?
We should. I'm still figuring out Kickstarter. I think Josh and I, this is an area where Josh and I both still have a lot to learn, because we come up with these things, we get all excited, and we make the comic, and then, you know, then we're kind of like, there we go. And the sort of the you know, the whole part of developing it and hyping it and getting people excited about it, I'm like, you know, I mean, I yeah, I'm just like, well, Josh already drew it and it looks amazing. What more do you people want?
Right, exactly. Yeah, no. And yeah, most people, yeah. I mean, they're just in it. I know for myself, I'm just in it to see the comic, but I was just curious. And I think most of the people we talk to, they get crazy with the with all of these stretch goals and stuff, have like quite a few Kickstarters under their belt, like 30 plus, where they're like, yeah, they do this all the time. And you know, they know how it goes pretty much. But
yeah. And I like one of the things that I've been, we've done so many of these with different Kickstarters. I've been in the Kickstarter ecosystem for so long that the simplicity of your campaign is nice too. Like, it's literally, do you want it in a PDF or do you want it physical? And then also, yep, do you want all three or do you want just one? I'd be curious to know the person that just wants issue three and not one and two. But
yeah,
it's mostly just for locals. Like, we have, you know, we have lots of people in our network,
right,
that have bought, that have already owned one and two. And so I wanted to make sure to accommodate them.
And then your only large, like, pledge is the commissions, which, to be honest, like, you know, I see what you're charging for all three physically, and for a commission, that's a good price. I like when the artist is more involved in the campaign, like you are, Josh, because commissions are a fun little additive to throw in there that not a lot of campaigns get to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's awesome that someone would actually want to pay a little bit more to get one of my commissions. I'm stoked. We have a couple that have gone for it so far.
Chris is definitely thinking about a Boba Fett commission over there. I can see the wheels turning.
I considered it. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with all. So, I mean, you do have, it's awesome that you have the samples too below of your art and like what the commissions look like too, because it's pretty freaking awesome. That's awesome.
You put the size on it. Is that a backer board size or is that a little bit bigger?
It's a little bit bigger. It's like standard, just legal paper size, printer paper size, but I don't know. I have a lot of card stock that I just use.
Yeah, it's half of an 11 by 17. So it's nice. It's like you take an 11 by 17 artboard and cut it in half. And yeah, I was just like, what size works for you, Josh? We'll just make the shipping and handling work on it, and we'll make sure we put it in like a really solid Gemini case. We'll go give those buyers that want a, you know, an original piece of art, something bomb proof to ship it in.
Yeah. And right. Yep.
Are you asking for the commissions after the campaign's done? Cause I'm curious to know what people have asked for.
Oh yeah. We haven't sent the message to them yet.
Oh, okay.
No request is too weird.
I was going to say, how weird could it come? Chris is like, oh, shit, I could really go with
that. Well, I was also really curious because I think a cool thing to do in some of these, if you're really into the book, is to get a Berserker Monk commission. Like,
yeah, right.
Stoked on that for sure.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
But hey, anything and everything. I mean, that's like, that was the one we're going into this. You don't really, I mean, I've never had experience like this. So how in depth should I go with guidelines? What you can, can't, but I was like, right. Whatever, I'll draw whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, if you come up with something super crazy, you might not like whatever weird thing that comes
shot. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
The last thing I wanted to ask before we kind of, get this to a close is, you know, three issues in the Berserker Monk. Do you have a plan on how long this series is, or is it ongoing, or, you know, when this is successful, the next one comes out, you know, where does that land in the series?
I do have a plan. Josh and I we've talked about it a little bit. I have the next, issue pretty much written. I know where we're going. I know how our villain, I've got an idea of how things end. I'm thinking two more issues. I'd like to do five. If people like it, like that's always the other part that, you know, I'm a big fan of audience feedback. Like, you know, if people are excited, if we get positive responses to the first three issues, great. I do feel like we have a nice arc here. I won't feel, I won't feel guilty. I'll feel like we've left readers with something satisfying. If you know, we just get over our funding goal and people are like, yeah, it was all right. You know, I think mine and Josh's efforts would be better directed towards the next thing. But if people are stoked, if we get a positive response and folks are excited, man, I'd love to tell this whole story right to, you know, right to the hero's end. That would be amazing.
Well, I mean, you're over halfway there already with still 22 days to go, so that's pretty It's pretty awesome. I'm sure you're gonna blow that away. Because I'm sure when you first start it, there's that initial funding, and then we always hear like the last 24 hours is always like a huge push too, with people getting notifications, so they, you know, go in and finally back it or something. So yeah,
you got to harass all those people that follow you, and just wait. And you're just I log into the Kickstarter and just look. What's wrong with you people? You've seen
refresh,
it.
Refresh. Yeah. Yeah. Come on. What are you doing?
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, what I see with a lot of creators too, is, you know, your whatever, your Twitter is filled with, hey, I got this thing going on. Hey, I got this thing day after day after day. But then there's still people that have backed every one of your Kickstarters and everything. And they on the, like, the third week are just like, oh, you have a Kickstarter out? It seems like you're harassing, it seems like you're spamming, but the algorithm is the algorithm, and some people just don't see it for some reason. So
yes, that's wild.
Well, wow. And going through the experience with promoting capsules, I was plugged into the, you know, the social media, everybody promoting there, and it was like, oh, I'm not annoyed by the guy who's promoting magic powder, or, you know, the fellows I worked with on Hallowed North. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one. I did a little bit of work for them on that project, but he was hyping Hallowed North at the same time. Issue two is the same time I was hyping Capsules, and I wasn't bothered by him.
Yeah.
And then, but right. When I went and looked at his feed, it was 1,000 Hallowed North posts, but it's like, oh yeah, the algorithms.
Yeah. You get one or two.
One in 20 of those.
Yep.
This is a good example. I'm just going to go for it and not worry, because, you know, people won't be bothered. Our AI overlords are too smart for that.
Yeah, they're smarter than me, that's for sure. Guys, I'm super pumped for the book. I know Chris is too. You definitely have a backer here, so I'm going to be reading it.
Nice.
If our viewers, our listeners, if you want them to follow you on social media that we're just talking about, lovely social media, where can we send them for you guys?
Now I have to actually check.
Oh, okay.
Josh is a social media wizard.
Yeah.
It's Josh_Thompson_art on Instagram. And I think just Josh Thompson Art altogether at Twitter.
Okay. I'm at Linktree/LelandWrites. And you can find all my stuff. You can find the Berserker Monk Kickstarter and all my various social media stuff.
Nice. Great. Awesome.
And everyone out there listening, watching, remember to check the show notes down below, because I will have a link to Berserker Monk Issue 3 Kickstarter. So go check out the campaign, check out the book, and go get it funded. Guys, thanks again so much for being on. Thanks, guys. We appreciate your time, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah. Thanks.
Love to do that. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And we are back.
Back on the other side. So go check out the Kickstarter now, Berserker Monk 3. You know, what more can we say? If you're a fan of D&D, if you're a fan of monks or berserkers, go for it. You know?
Do it.
All right, comic news. Comixology Originals announced that Scott Snyder and Jock will reunite once again for a new series called Book of Evil. Series said to be a combination of storytelling, illustration, and prose stories. Sounds pretty cool. Love me some Jock. Love me some Scott Snyder. I'm in it. Price of entry is pretty low because you get it free with Amazon Prime. So I'm in.
I might skip this because it reminds me of the Capullo one he did, where it was like Capullo draws a pretty picture and then I tell a prose story.
Oh, okay.
I didn't get too far in that. I think I got like probably 10 pages in before I was like, I just don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like the way it's set up what I don't like. So I don't know if I will or not, but, it's cool to see those two back.
Yep.
And, do love Comixology Originals. Recommend it to everybody.
Global Comics is shaking up comics with their new publishing announcement. The online digital comic store will team up with Oxeye Media to form GC Press. GC Press will be a print-on-demand service that allows customers to get print versions of the comics on the service that opt in, ship to their home anywhere in the world. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, this is huge. And they said that creators who independently put their stuff on will have like discounts. So if you're doing a Kickstarter or something, you can do it through them. You can just order what you need for the Kickstarter and you get your discounted rate. You can have shops order straight from there and shops will get a discount. Like, there's so many cool things here that could and should help independent comic creators get their books in around the world much more efficiently. So I am like super excited about this. I think that anyone that's an independent creator that doesn't have a network or is just coming up, this is a great place to start. And I kind of hope that some of the, even the ones that are a little bit bigger, adopt it, because it could create its own distribution center for independent creators that, you know, I want to go get, I'm a shop owner and, oh, Berserker Monk looks cool. I'll get, you know, 10 issues of each of that. And then, oh yeah, and then, you know, Travis Gibbs books on there. I'll grab some of those too, and you can get like an actual order in for your store as opposed to, you know, just having one or two. So awesome, awesome stuff. I'm really excited about this news.
Yeah. I don't actually use Global Comics enough, but I'm interested in checking it out now. That's for sure.
Yeah, they're an interesting company too, because they give full PDFs.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have their proprietary thing. Right. You can actually buy the full PDF. And they've got like Valiant and Source Point and...
Yeah, there's some cool publishers on there.
Yeah, some bigger publishers. So it's a really cool place.
Yeah. All right, with that, let's talk about what we read this week. A couple books that I are catching up from last week. Quest Aside number 5 kind of wrapped up the first.
Caught up on that too.
Oh, nice! Love this story. Yeah, hell yeah. By Shormer, that was on the show, and Gogao on the art. Sorry. Wraps up the first arc nicely. They get to keep the bar. The king and the main character kind of put aside their issues. I thought it was a good wrap up. I want to see more of this comic, so I really like
it. Yeah, I hope he does another 5-issue series or something. Like,
yeah,
I think there's some cool stories to tell in this world, and I really like that series.
Yeah, I think his characterization is really good. Barbaric 2, caught up on that. Love that shit. I think the orc storyline is fucking awesome. I love all the supporting characters. I think they're awesome. I love the dude. I love like the blonde haired Conan guy that he's running around with. I love all the characters in that book. I love that the storyline is like, cause I just started playing like the Shadow of Mordor, or the Shadow of War games, where it's like the storyline is he kills an orc and then there's another orc to kill after that. Like, you know,
yeah,
there's just a chain of command. Really loving that story. Something I know you didn't read, Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, number 3. This is Jean Lunier, Marcus To. Basically, MI6 like takes the rings from Shang-Chi, and they're like, you can't have them, you're evil. And they do this thing where they bring in this like magic user to like lock them away, kind of like the Sword and the Stone kind of situation, like Excalibur. So she turns all 10 rings into one ring, and the ring opens up like this portal that this evil like monster worm thing comes through, and it starts turning people into zombies, but they're like overpowered zombies. So Shang-Chi gets his rings back, and now at the end of this issue, there's these two like mystical guys watching all this unfold, and they're basically like, we don't think this dude should have the 10 rings. We should have a tournament to find a champion of the rings. So now we're getting a tournament to come up to find out who gets to possess the rings.
Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat. Yeah, hell yeah, let's go. Which is funny because this is like the same storyline that we saw in Immortal Iron Fist, which is a great storyline. So I love me some tournaments. Huge Dragon Ball Z fan. DC Mech number 3 by Porter and Rebus. I don't know if you're still reading this one, but it's kind of messed up. Luther uses Steve Trevor and his team of like fighters to sacrifice in space, like because he knows Darkseid is going to kill them. So he basically uses them. He leaves them up there in space and abandons them, and is like, now if you guys die, then you know the world will be on my side to like start fighting aliens. So obviously Justice League goes to save them. They lose the fight. And then in the middle of that, Superman gets shot down to Smallville for the first time. So he is in his mech and he crashes. And so we're going to see the fallout of all that. And it's interesting that Superman lands and meets Ma and Pa Kent as an adult. So interesting.
I'll say I've read the first 2 issues so far.
Yeah.
And this might be my Marvel bias, but I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy the Marvel. I mean, so Monster Hunters aside, the other Marvel mech books I thought were much better than this. But that's,
I think the first one by Jim Zub was probably the best. All of them after that have kind of, I don't think it's just the Marvel property, because I still like that first one by the Avengers Mech Strike by Jim Zub. I think Jim did a great job. This one, they're really kind of like all Tacon over the place. Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Tacon was a different kind of fun where it feels like Monster Hunters is like, I mean, they're all, hey, let's sell some toys, but
right.
Monster Hunters feels even more like, oh, kids toys. Really like those Mech Strike toys. Let's put monsters on them.
Yep. This is the gem of the week. Sergeant Rock and the Army of the Dead, number one, by none other than Bruce fucking Campbell and Riso on the art. The Nazis are making zombies. That's all you need to know. That's the first issue. A lot of fun. I read it and I was like, Nazi zombies? Chris is fucking in. There's no way he's putting that book down.
I really liked it. They found a way to make Hitler even more of a bad guy.
Yeah. yeah, for sure.
Like it's in the first couple of pages, so this isn't a spoiler, really. Yeah. But he like literally rips a guy's head off in the first couple of pages. So yeah, I was like, oh shit! Like, because Hitler's one of those characters where you can just like throw him in a book and you're just like bad guy.
Yeah, right.
But like Bruce went that extra mile and was like, no, he's the Hitler that rips guys' heads off.
Yeah, this is the Hitler we're dealing with.
I really like this book. Yeah,
really good. And it's not just that goofy. Like Bruce definitely understands the World War and all that shit. Like he has a grasp of everything, and I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It's one of those like genres, themes, whatever you want to call it, where it's like World War II, Nazi zombies. That just it's hard to fuck up. And I love it every time. Yeah. So
Dead Snow is such a good movie. I need to rewatch that. 8 Billion Genies, number 5, Charles Soule, Ryan Brown. This seems to wrap up the first story arc. I thought it was a solid issue. The world gets kind of remade, but there's these sanctuaries. And then everybody kind of goes their own way, leaving the bar that they're hiding in after 8 months. And then the next issue says it'll happen 8 years later. It was a solid issue.
I liked that one when it came out.
Superman Space Age, number 2 by Mark Russell and Mike Allred. There's so much happening in this book. I now know what this series is, Chris. I'm not mad about it either. It is the Spider-Man 60s, 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like. I don't know. I forgot what those were called, but like this issue takes place in the 70s. I think it's a great intertwining of like real world events with the Justice League and those characters and how that affects it all. And, Mark Russell's a great writer. He handles that great. Allred's art is fantastic. I'm really loving it. I love those books by Marvel. So this is kind of where we're at. I'm in. So
I have it over there. I haven't gotten to it because it's so big.
Yeah, it's like 90 pages. It's crazy.
Yeah. And it's been such a busy week that I didn't have time to sit down for 90 pages of that.
Yeah.
Because it probably would have been all I read this week.
Yeah, it's a commitment.
Yeah, but I love that first issue.
Yep. Batman Fortress, number 5. Gary Whitta, Derek Robertson. They have they kind of assemble a team. Jackson is on that team. I don't know if he was ever referred to as Aqualad. They have a team to find the fortress because we know it's at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. And Jackson helps them out with the powers. And that's pretty much that. They find it and we'll see how they get in next issue.
Yeah, Miko joins the team, which I don't know. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did like Luther's new paint job on his suit with the presidential seal on it and everything. That was hilarious. The presidential seal
on the suit was pretty awesome. That was pretty sick.
You explained it. Oh, let's get the team together.
Yeah. Batman Beyond the White Knight, number 5. Sean Murphy, Dave Stewart. I think it was a great issue. Interesting thing happens where the consciousness gets swapped between, there it is. Because we know Batman has the Joker in his head, so now that Joker is in the head of Batman's body and Batman is like his subconscious, it gets kind of weird for a little bit. I love the scene with the Batmobiles. you know, they're like, which Batmobile do you want to take? And they, of course, they grab the 89.
Yep, picked the wrong one.
Yeah, they picked the wrong one. I think animated series one would have been better, but I know they did that to like piss everybody off, because I really don't think the 89 Batmobile is anybody's favorite.
No.
I mean, why would it not be the animated series? But he definitely like had people open that page and be like, okay, you can pick your favorite Batmobile. We're not going to choose it.
Yeah, because they either picked, because they had the Tumblr there, which I thought that would have been more controversial, but maybe people really like that. Yeah. Batmobile was there, and then 66 was there.
Yeah,
I was like, if he chooses 66, that would have been so funny.
That would have been so funny. I'm just glad they included it. I thought that was awesome. So, yeah, it was a fun story. And then Terry kills Powers. Maybe it looks like he got incinerated, but got some weird powers. He's definitely not becoming
Blight.
Yeah.
So yeah, Powers becomes Blight in Batman Beyond, which is the like basically Radioactive Man.
Yeah.
So that was what was happening there. The ending to this tore me apart, dude.
Yeah, Batman and Harley Quinn like get back together and like confess their love for each other. That was pretty crazy. So that was
during the time when they had switched consciousness. So it was Jack confessing his love. And I'm guessing that even though they switch consciousness, he still looks like Bruce.
Right, yeah.
And Harley just like reciprocated, but to Bruce. And I was like, damn, like that tore me up, man.
Yeah, that was not. Yeah, and then they're kind of like, there's going to be a falling out, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. It was
great to have that book back.
Yeah, Sean Murphy's killing it. Dave Stewart's art, man. Sick, too. DC Vampires number 9. This is my last book. Tinian Roseberg. Fucking great intro with Green Arrow. We're doing like the Green Arrow from Dark Knight Returns. Old raggedy looking, killing some vampires. He's just being a fucking badass. And then there's this cool fight with the team that's out in the ocean. Aquaman shows up. Chris was probably like, fuck yeah. And then we find out Black Manta isn't Black Manta. He takes the helmet off and it's fucking Mara. And they have this awesome fight.
Amazing reveal.
Yeah, that was sick. And then Damian shows up and he's like, yeah, I'm a vampire, but I'm going to help you all. And that's how it's going to happen. So,
Yeah, having all the like side issues and the All Out War series and everything is nice, but
yeah,
it feels like forever since we had the proper book, and I forgot how good the actual book was.
Yeah, I kind of dropped off in the tie-ins, honestly, because it wasn't as good as this.
Yeah,
for sure. And that's all I had this week.
I finished Justice League versus Legion of Superheroes issue 6 came out, so that's done. What a disappointing
There's a reason I stopped reading like halfway through.
Dude, they literally, how you see them defeat the darkness is they capture Vandal Savage.
Uh-huh.
Because he's the one behind it all.
Of course.
And then they're like, they're trying to get him to confess to doing it through this like weird mind game shit, and he does, and then they like the whole Justice League and Legion shows up and they're like, we got you, and then he's like, yes, but the darkness is still out there. He's like, no, we took care of that off panel, it's cool. And I'm like, what?
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh wow.
Then he at no point explains what the Gold Lanterns are like. That does not get explained. It's called the Gold Lantern Saga.
Yeah.
But now there's going to be like an actual core, like the kid who is the one Gold Lantern is supposed to go out and find more Gold Lanterns. So,
oh my God.
As much as I didn't enjoy this, I did enjoy Bendis's Legion. So like if he comes back for more Legion.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
I'd probably jump back on.
Yeah, for sure.
But this series was not. No. No
point. I can tell, like, 3 issues in, we're not going to find out anything about Gold Lantern.
I had to finish it, dude. I had to know. Because if he did and I didn't read it, I would have pulled hair out.
it was like 80% sure. I was like, I don't know if I can do this again.
Yeah, he also, so you're not, you never read a bunch of Bendis before, but he went full Bendis like way too much in those first two issues.
Oh yeah, so
I remember those, you being like, what is this?
Yeah, those fucking, those full page spreads, and those are even worse. I'll have you know, if you're a digital reader, those full page spreads are so bad on digital because it opens up and you got to zoom in on every bubble with your fingers, and I just get so tired of it.
Like, I was reading it digitally, but I use my tablet. I think you still use your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I use my tablet too, but like sometimes I can't read those words. So like, I know you can do like Comixology, you can do the panel by panel. And sometimes I do that, but it gets annoying. I like to read the full page at a time.
I would kind of zoom in enough where I could read it and still get some of the picture. But I know what you mean. Yeah. So that series happened. And then the All-Nighter issue 10 came out. The end of this story arc, it sets it up in a way. So it concludes the story arc. We get kind of the ending to what happens to the villain here and everything. You have something to say? But, so to everybody listening out there, there's a function in our chat where Mike can just like raise his hand digitally. And he keeps pressing it just to disrupt me. And I'm not cutting this out, anybody. The All-Nighter issue 10. So it wraps it all up. We get kind of the conclusion of what happened to the villain and like the big bad fight. And then like Dracula reappears. And it sets it up for another series as well. So I'm really hoping he keeps going with the book. Because I like where it set off. And I like the world that he's creating moving forward.
I was doing that just to annoy you. Sorry.
Knights of the Fifth Dimension, issue, I believe, 4. On the last issue. Cool wrap-up to the story. Like, the new writer who's taking over as the architect of the Fifth Dimension goes in. And in doing it, and like kind of defeating Vanta Black and pushing him back, he's taking control of this comic universe. Mm. And I liked how in the beginning, the psychedelic Knights of the Fifth Dimension were like old school Justice League. And when he took over and did it, it was almost like the dark reimagining of it. So it kind of like flowed with the history of comics and how he did it. So I really liked it. I think it's a really good series. Some people might have issue with the art, but I like the art and I recommend it to people. Miles Morales, Spider-Man 42, last issue of this series until the new one starts. Basically, you just gotta know it's his goodbye. Like, it's Solomon on Ahmed saying goodbye to the book and to the character. Not a whole lot happens. Damage Control number 2. So in this issue, Gus gets a new job at Damage Control, and he's going to be a part of the complaint department.
Okay.
And he's supposed to cycle through complaints to see who can get reimbursed for their trauma or for something that happened to them. But he's such a sucker that he lets everybody through and just sends every person who comes to him to the next level and finds out that everybody's just bullshitting him. So then when his boss like gets on him and says, you know, you got to stop sending everybody, you got to actually vet these people, he vets somebody and just like completely tears apart this guy who claims that Ant-Man shrunk his family and is like, you're lying and all this stuff. And it turns out he was the one guy telling the truth. I think this is a really fun series. Next issue, he'll get a new job at Damage Control. So I recommend it. Captain America, Symbol of Truth, number 5. I wanted to talk a little bit about this one because there is like a really great conversation in the first like 5 pages between Sam and T'Challa about like their personal histories and the history of like their people, where like T'Challa is being real like punchy with Sam, like, you know, you can't tell us what to do, you shouldn't be here, blah blah blah, and you don't know anything about my history and what my family's been through. And Sam cuts back and is just like, well, it must have been nice to have this like big kingdom in Africa while like my family was being enslaved over here,
right?
And I'm simplifying it, obviously, but I loved the way they handled that conversation and where it all ended. So it's been a really good book. Thor 27, I won't get into too much. It's plotted by Donnie, but it's really an Al Ewing book. It's tying into his Venom run. Venom comes to Asgard. Oh, it was okay. And then I've been trying to get through my Kickstarter pile. So I've got here Galactic Rodents of Mayhem, number one. This is like a
that sounds awesome.
Love letter to... It's a combination of TMNT and Guardians of the Galaxy. And it really feels like a love letter to like 90s cartoons. Like, what was that? Like Biker Mice from Mars or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Street Sharks and shit like that.
Yeah, Street Sharks. But
taken seriously.
Okay.
And I really recommend it. 3 and 4 are on Kickstarter right now. So the whole series is on Kickstarter. They're giant fucking like prints. So
awesome.
If you can see in the video, like that's a standard book.
Yeah, they're huge. Like magazine size, bigger.
Yeah, and he puts in like an extra story in these two, where it's like the full story, and then there's like a little mini story at the end. So you get a lot of bang for your buck.
Cool.
I got the second issue over there too. I look forward to reading it, but I really like this book and I wanted to shout it out because it really shocked me and how good it was. So Mike, that's everything I had this week. Where could people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
Well, you find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter, and you can find the show at Fortress Comics _ on Twitter. Also at FortressComicNews.com. Remember, everybody, to give us the reviews on the podcatchers, to like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube version. And if you want to go the extra mile, Patreon at patreon.com/FortressComics. Thank you all so much for listening and watching this week, and we will see you all here next week.